I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying, but can we vote again on Cancer Man?
Cancer Man was vetoed, okay?
But who vetoed?
You're outnumbered. It was 3-1.
No, the cats don't vote.
The cats do vote. They're part of their.
They're always going to vote.
How about we
do this? How about our intro introduce it? Hello.
How you doing?
Fancy seeing you here. Welcome to what? First of all, I am Jason Jamal, aka Sincere 529. Who are you?
I am Cynthia.
You are Cynthia.
I don't have any good AKAs.
You are
Sincerity.
An AKA,
I am an AKA.
That's very good. You're also known as what? I'm just kidding.
Sincerity. And
so we're recording this podcast on the premise and on the basis of it being recognizing the survivors, the caretakers of cancer survivors, correct?
Yes, November is caregiver month, and I think it's caregivers for everybody, but being that I am a breast cancer survivor and you are my co-survivor, we are talking about breast cancer caregiving this month and getting the perspective of my co-survivor.
Very cool. Just for the benefit of the audience, how long have you been a survivor? Do you want to tell a little bit about the cancer you had?
Sure. So, way back when now?
Way back when?
2018?
Yes.
2018 in March, I was diagnosed with stage 2 invasive hormone positive breast cancer.
Was it March or just February?
No, remember all that testing was right after your birthday. Right, I got the phone call right at the beginning of March.
Yes.
And so it has been 3 years, whoop, since the end of all of my active treatment. Mm-hmm. I went through surgery, a lumpectomy, chemotherapy, followed by radiation. And I will be in ongoing surveillance and hormone therapy for 5 to 10 years. So it's been 3 years since active treatment. And now I'm just seeing the doctor all too damn much, but glad to be here.
I held your purse while you got all that done.
You did.
First of all, I'm glad you are here and you made it through all of that. That was a scary time.
Thank you. It was.
That was a very scary time. Especially when, like you said, around my birthday when you were getting all the initial tests and everything done. It was like, oh man, this isn't happening again.
So I gave my backstory. Let's talk about your experience with cancer.
Well, before I was a twinkle in my father's eye. my backstory with cancer. I have seen several family members go through cancer. My mother, my father, my grandmothers, and one of my sisters. And you and my sister are the only ones who come out the other side.
Wow. Yes. Now, I remember you were going to see Eric for your birthday that year. Yes. And I was going to do like your daddy.
Yeah.
And go get me a whole biopsy and come home and be like, yeah, nothing happened.
I'm glad you didn't do that. Because you know what else was going on at that time? I was also unemployed during that time. I got laid off that previous Christmas. So now we're in February. You're getting all your biopsy stuff done. And in March, you're diagnosed. That's already a lifetime of hard stuff right there.
Yeah. Oil and gas took a downturn. And
I wasn't even oil and gas at the time.
It wasn't?
That was Staples.
Oh, that was Staples, yeah, right.
So it might as well have been oil and gas, though.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was. There was already that. We already had life happening.
And a whole lot of life happening.
And then life said, hold my beer. Let me have you considered this? And then, so where do you want to start with this? I mean that we've introed it.
Yes. So tell me, you've already said it was a scary time. What was going through your head prior to diagnosis?
Prior to diagnosis, I was thinking, like, if it comes back that you do have cancer, like, you know, being that I've seen this many times, I need to be as much as the best caretaker I could be in that moment. You know, so anything that I thought I knew how to do then, and mind you, when my parents went through this, I was very young. So now I just turned 38. I just turned 38 and my woman has cancer. So it's like, all right, I had to do whatever I can to make sure that you come out the other end. And, you know, I'm not doing anything the doctors are doing, not even close. But I think the at-home support and the daily was going to be important. So that's what I immediately wanted to focus on that. And then not even knowing, like, you know, you and I talk a lot about, you know, not seeing ourselves as adults and being right. kids. Like, in that moment, it's like, we're adults going through this real adult stuff right now.
Right.
So I have to be, like, I am literally, like, I'm the man in her life. So I have to really, and it wasn't scary to be there, but it's like, this is, like, what's presented for me, before me. And you hear these inspirational stories, and, you know, people talk about, you know, my mate did this and that and third, but, you know, I know I wasn't expecting some kind of magical happy ending. I just wanted you to live. That's all. And I was going to do whatever I could to have that happen.
I appreciate that. And you did that. I remember being terrified of telling you, because you've been through it. Like, dude, how many times do you have to do this?
But I have to know, though.
You had to know, of course. Yeah. I mean, but it was just like, dude.
Yeah, it's not something you expect to hear, but I mean, just given what you're going through at the time, it's like, okay, it's a possibility that this is the case. So if this is the case, this is what we got to do.
Right.
So I didn't want to allow myself to get into any modes of doubt, because you didn't need that for me, definitely, at that point in time. So it's like, okay, whatever comes back, we're just going to handle it. I'm going to do my part.
And that you did. You did.
I didn't know what I was doing half the time, though.
I mean, I guess there isn't a real way to prepare for it. No. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing half the time.
But I mean, it's like, it's different. It's like, you know, you have the actual cancer. You're the one that has to actually walk this walk. So it's difficult to find out what you need to do as far as being supportive, you know, making sure that you're eating, making sure that you're resting. And even with that, you don't know what's even regulated anymore, what you can have anymore. You know,
right.
You're trying to communicate with your doctors to see, you know, what's okay for you to have, what's not. I remember during one of your earlier consultations, the really eclectic doctor you had,
the geneticist,
yes. she pulled me aside. She's like, look, she's not going to feel like being supported someday. She's going to be moody, but you know, you have to make sure that, you know, that you're okay during this process as well. So that was my first foray into knowing that there is care needed for the caretaker.
There absolutely is. And that's why I think, like, this month is important to not just celebrate, but to ensure that caregivers know that they need to be taken care of as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that gets lost in the fray. And I can understand how, you know, if someone's sick,
right.
You know, it's hard to be like, but what about me? But
right.
I mean, it has to be a balance, because you can only pour, you know,
you can't pour from an
empty cup. Yeah. So like, you have to still be able to take care of you. Were you able to find any of that balance during that time?
I think I was in my second or third year of therapy. And then again, like, dealing with the job loss, trying to hustle and do like DoorDash, Uber Eats and stuff like that. And still remain, you know, a picture in our daily process. Cause like, our life has changed for us as we know it, you know, especially when you started your treatments. Not, you know, it was a little bit of hope when they said you might not have to do chemo. I was like, mm-hmm. yes, you know, cause I saw all my relatives go through chemo. And then the radiation as well. So I'm like, when that was off the table, I was just hoping that they caught it early enough to where you didn't have to go through that part of it. But once that was reintroduced, I was like, okay, we're here. We got to walk through the door. But what did I do? Therapy and just an occasional escape to kind of clear my head. But, you know, just to reset and come back, because it got heavy some days.
Absolutely, it did. It did.
But I wouldn't change a thing, though. You know, I just... And then it's weird. It's like, I wish I was working at the time, but I mean, I wouldn't. You always tell me you wouldn't have been working and having to take off.
No, imagine starting a new job and I had to go to chemo when you couldn't go with me.
Right, right. That'd have been tough.
Right. You would. So I mean, as hard as it was to not be working, I think it would have been equally as hard had you been working, especially at a new job where you didn't have the flexibility to take off like you wanted to be there.
See, like the not working, that's a major component, because of, you know. You know how the black males do in the black community and how work is done. So like, it was that stigma that was hanging over my head that I didn't want to become, I guess, the rule in that case. You know, you always want to be the exception. So
of course, you
want to be a black man working. You want to make sure you're supporting your woman. You want to make sure that everything is on point as far as you're concerned, and things are not going right. You know, and it was pushing a boulder uphill with ice skates with one arm tied behind your back. It was tough.
It was tough. It was tough. I can imagine on the other end. I mean, I've been a caregiver of sorts, and I've, you know, helped people through their journeys. But being the sole caregiver, the round the clock 24/7, and having, you know, everything you feel as a man that you have to be doing. Right. I can imagine that it was just a little bit of a chaotic period.
I went to the bathroom and cried like Ray Charles did sometimes. But no, like I said, just having seen it before, like, I mean, I was prepared for it, whether I knew it or not.
Right.
I was prepared for it. And just, well, in, by prepared, I mean just from a situational standpoint. Didn't have everything I probably wanted to give you in those moments. But I knew that I was prepared enough mentally to know, like, look, whatever effort is going to be put forth towards you improving and getting better and, you know, persevering through this process was going to be needed. So every little bit was going to count, whether I knew what I was doing or not.
And it did count, every single bit of it.
What sticks out most to you about those moments? Like, I know things that stick out to me. You mind if I share?
Like, I don't mind, share away.
One of the things that stick out to me most was, I think it was after your third chemo treatment, and you hadn't lost any hair yet. So we're sitting on the couch, and you're playing your hair like you always do, and the piece comes out in your hand, and I'm like, okay, this is happening. I don't know what to do in this situation. I do not know what to do. But I was like, look, I'm bald. You want me to show you how we do this? So we made it. We kind of made it fun. I thought we made it fun.
I think we did. And oh my God, hair loss was traumatic.
It was different.
You've seen me sit on the floor and cry over
That's on a regular hair day.
Yeah, on a regular hair day, hair just not acting right, being frustrated. Right. And I've cut my hair. And in fact, I had went natural prior to this mm-hmm. and had big chopped and looked like a whole boy for a minute.
You look like a boy.
But when it started coming out, I lost it for a little bit. I did. Yeah. I did.
Rightfully so, and understandably so.
And you shaved my head and kissed my face and told me I was beautiful.
We got the razor. We buzzed you down. And then, you know. Got you nice and you got a cute little head. He's rocking the ball. You look like a Dora Milaje.
Yeah, that was a moment that really sticks out to me. And one of those pivotal moments, I think.
Well, like I said, being that I've seen you have those moments with your hair, and I knew that was. And then, you know, I have a different understanding about women in their hair, black women in their hair, black women in their hair, especially. It's a sign of their femininity, it's a sign mm-hmm. of their virtue. So for that to come out in that manner and just in the way that it did, it's like you're not going to walk through this alone.
It's like you can almost pretend that it's not happening a little bit. And then when you lose that hair and you're walking around bald, it's like shit just got real, real.
It just got really real. And I was thinking like, dang, got to do three treatments and nothing had happened yet. So like, hey, maybe she might get through this without losing her hair. Because they said it was a possibility.
Right.
You might not lose your hair. So, you know, holding hope for that. But, you know, just the fact that your body is having to endure what it's enduring to get rid of this illness that's in you. It's like, all right, you know, whatever happens, you need to be supported through it. You know, I remember seeing my mom go through. I didn't get to see her go through the process of losing her hair the way you did. I came to see my mom one day, and she didn't have any hair on. She didn't have any hair. You know,
right.
She had her hair wrapped up, and then started growing back in the similar style yours grew in. But, you know, it was just, didn't know why my mom was going through this. But
right.
Now I know I got to see more of, you know, lack of a better term, how the sausage is being made. You know, I'd see how it's happening. And not only am the sausage being made, I'm the butcher in there with it. So like, you don't like how the sausage is being made, you couldn't be in the kitchen. But I was mentally prepared for it.
I mean, what was it like had seen your mom go through it as a child, not fully understanding, being privy to everything? Now your woman is going through it.
It's scary, but in two different ways, because I didn't have a real understanding. I was 13 when my mom went through this. So mm-hmm. I didn't have a really good understanding of perspective at all, because as a child, you're shielded by this
right.
from a lot of the adults, which my older sisters are shielding me from. My father shielded me from. So it's like now I'm the one that would be shielding if we had kids or anybody else
right.
going through. Like, regardless of who I have to shield, and I'm the forefront, I'm the point man on this. So it's like, okay, your woman's losing her hair. What you going to do? It's like, it's literally what you're going to do. Nobody's coming through that door. It's like, these are the tough, pivotal moments, like you said, that we have to deal with. And you can make it or break it. I could have shown a lack of support, and that would have been probably even more detrimental to you going through this and your journey. And it's important to not be that.
Right.
You know, again, because I can feel how I feel, but I'm still not going through what you're going through. You know, I can feel everything I want, but I still don't have the cancer. I'm still not getting the treatments, and I'm still not having to deal with the hair loss and just see my body and my life change in ways that I've never experienced, and your life is on the line, essentially.
So yeah.
It's just a better understanding of it and just knowing, like, look, you gotta be as supportive as you possibly can. And it's scary because you don't know, like, you know, you get the bullet points, but when you're in those moments and you're alone, you gotta get creative.
I can imagine. What is it like trying to stay partnered, romantic, attracted to someone when you're also their caregiver?
It's difficult. I will say that in those moments where stress is that high, you know, romanticism isn't at the forefront of things.
Right.
Especially when you're worried about how bills are going to get paid, and then, oh yeah, my woman's going to be, you know, going through this process, like, so. But it's still imperative that I don't want to use fake it till you make it, because there was nothing being faked in that moment. But it's still you exacerbate the points that are making it.
Right.
You know, so the points that the things that are working with us, you emphasize those and you just build on that. And I think everything else to come back. You know,
mm-hmm.
Life is ebb and flow. It's not going to ever be one consistent thing. You're not going to ever be consistently blissful. You got to go through different things to understand why bliss feels the way it is,
right,
and why agony feels the way it is. So, you know, you just ride the wave and you do your best while you're doing it, but there's no instructions for any of this.
There's
no instructions for any of
it. I'm still learning things about cancer every day.
Right.
You know, what do you feel about, how do you make you feel being called a co-survivor?
I would have never thought of it in those terms. It feels weird. Because it still feels weird even having it being made about me. So in just a bit of disclosure, when you wrote an article, I don't know if it was a few months back. When
probably
you
about a few months back. Uh-huh.
And I'm reading your perspective, and the ego says, she didn't explain me. But like, the reality is, it's not about me. It's not about me. And I've always held that, but it's still human side.
Right.
She didn't write nothing about me. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. You know, this is your moment. But like now this comes up and I get to tell my story. But
right.
Like now I'm not even, I had that one moment of ego when in the grand scheme of things, I would never even think in those terms. You know?
But I would have felt the same way.
Yeah.
In full disclosure.
Okay.
You know, we are the best of friends, but we're not together anymore. So sure. I don't know how to write about you if
right.
you want to be
then
written about.
There's so then there's that, you know.
It's a funny space to even really be doing this.
True.
You know, but it is our story, and this is my co-survivor and my amazing caretaker who rocked with me all the way and still does. So I think it was important to share this month with him and to get his perspective and to celebrate his caregiving, not just for me. I'm just the latest. But
damn,
no.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you've been through this a lot.
And it doesn't seem like it. It just seems like, you know, life happens and you just go through it.
Right.
You just go through it. But you know, you had me in the kitties.
Bad.
You had the
badness. All yours.
they had my back though. Like, look, what are we doing today? They're looking at me. Like, okay, we're doing whatever we're going to do, but you got to feed us first.
Right.
I scoop my boo-boo out of my litter box.
Dude, you tending to mommy again?
Yeah.
What about us?
It's got two bad cats.
Yeah.
But your mom was clutch, because when she hired the cleaning lady, I was like, oh,
yes.
Your mom was clutch. I was like, yes. I was like, Will Smith, the Pursuit of Happiness, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, your mama came through. Shout out.
Yeah, that was, and those are the kind of things that I don't think people, it's not always having to be the caregiver. It's the little things sometimes. It's the meal. It's the cooking. It's
right.
The, you know, my sister took me to chemo sometimes. You know, it's just kind of all hands on deck. But even with full family support, which I had, you know, again, you were my man. That's the who's up with me at 3 a.m. when I'm not feeling good.
I remember we would be sitting there just on regular days and after treatment especially. And we'd just be sitting on the couch and you wouldn't be feeling good, but we'd just be sitting there. And I think
right.
that was just enough in those moments. And sometimes that's all it took. Sit there, you laying on my lap or your legs are laying on me and cats over there on the other couch or something, and we just sitting there. That, a lot of times, is what caregiving is. It's not no flashy, you know, stuff that goes on, but, you know, once you were asleep, maybe get up, make you some dinner, do your laundry. Those things, that's all I knew how to do. I didn't know what else to do in those moments.
But that's what I needed.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that cuddle time has always been.
Cuddle time is important.
You know, that that closeness, that intimacy, whether we're not saying anything, mm-hmm. we're not doing anything special, but just having you close by was definitely so important to everything that I was going through.
I think even with and then those confines, that was those are the things that didn't need to change with us. We still needed our cuddle time. So when you speak about attraction and all this stuff, you know, I said ebb and flow with that, but those things remain consistent, I think.
Right.
You know, you still have to feel the love coming from you and still have to feel loved, you know? And I think that is important, especially with the changes your body is going through in those moments. And, you know, it's just tough to remain, I'll say it's tough, but it's, I think it's imperative to remain vigilant on the basics that, that the fundamentals that go into relationships. Like, you know, this is why I love this person. I love spending time with this person.
Right.
So those things should, the, those basic, like those first date moments should be the things that come to play when you're doing those moments alone and in a situation like that. I think, you know, if I could give any kind of expertise, but like this, those moments are not what I was able to give my parents because I was a little, just too young.
Right.
But you know, when I think back as to when my dad was not kind of taking care of my mom, I saw those intimate caretaking moments, but I saw them really just exist in a, like, I love them as my parents being together, but I saw them exist in a friend space. And right. It was enough for both of them in that moment. You know? Mm-hmm. Definitely was enough for my mom.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, I'll never forget after surgery and we were walking up the block and you were like, I remember my dad and my mom.
I remember them walking.
After her surgery and just getting her up and kind of walking and getting some fresh air.
You know what I also remember? I remember us after one of your treatments going to see Acrimony.
Did we?
It was after one of your treatments. That horrible movie, but we were both like, this movie is bad.
That movie is god awful.
But it's still, we still have something to call back on.
But that's typical us.
Yeah,
sitting up in a movie theater, enjoying ourselves, and picking apart a movie afterwards. Apart,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely. I do appreciate you asking my thoughts on this, though.
I appreciate you.
Sorry I couldn't do this sooner.
It's all right. Yeah. As long as we get to do it and get to celebrate you this month.
Oh, yeah.
Were there any tools, resources, books, apps, videos, anything that kind of helped you get through your time?
Like I said, I was going off muscle memory, but I think my just being in therapy at the time mm-hmm. really did wonders for me. Shout out to my therapist, Miss Jackson. I always give Miss Jackson.
Woo, Miss Jackson.
But she's always given me great exercises to do, and then things to focus on, whatever I'm dealing with at that point in time in life. And back then, I was going almost every week, but I think I had scaled back because I wasn't working. But I was still going frequently enough to where, you know, okay, you know, she kind of kept me going.
Right. Good.
And then we left out the big factor. We're both away from home, like. You know, and as far as just being in Texas.
So well, yes and no. So we're away from home. We're Cali folks, Cali but folks. My mommy and daddy are
your mommy,
here.
Yeah.
And in fact, this whole move, my dad came home to Texas. My mom followed us here. And this was the first ever doctor's appointment I mm-hmm. had with both my mother and father, at least that I can recall.
Right. They were there.
Yeah.
I remember them being there for your surgery. And that was another thing about, like, I know I'm an adult because everything was going through me. Like, everybody's, all information coming through me, all the doctors coming up to me, giving me updates on you. I'm like, damn, I'm really an adult in this piece, man. But it's like, I was shielded from this, even though, you know, I can do little things, take care of my dad. And like, as I got older, I did more of my dad and even more of my sister and my grandmother. But like, I was the point man for this. And that's scary. Because you don't want to, you know, make a mistake. You know, want to make sure you're doing everything that's right. But then you don't want to be the point man. And that's where the bad news is going to drop. And I'm glad no bad news came
out. We didn't have any more bad news.
Nope, did not. But
it's been a hell of a journey, man.
I remember you ringing that bell, though. That was the best feeling ever. You ring that bell. That was a great feeling. It was awesome. And I'm glad you made it through. And I'm glad you walked out the other end of it. And all that pretty hair is back.
Right? It is.
I kept mine like this, though. I decided to keep mine in this style, you know. Is there anything else you'd like to ask me?
I'm trying to think of some good questions.
I was trying to prepare for this. I don't know if I was going to be prepared enough, but, you know, just wanted to.
I think my most important question was, you know, like, how do you stay partnered? How do you stay boyfriend and girlfriend mm-hmm. when you move into caretaker mode? And I guess there's different levels of caretaking. Like, you didn't have to wipe my ass, thank the Lord. You know, but in some relationships, you have to go that far.
I was prepared too.
And I know you absolutely would have, and we probably would have talked shit to each other later. You know, we find a way to joke about stuff later.
Probably.
But
I'd have made it fun. Like, it's how babies be feeling after they get a diaper change.
You know, but it's.
No, it's those things are important. And like I said, none of this stuff comes with instructions. But I say, if you have the relationship basics, you know, I think the basics and the fundamentals will get you through those moments where you're missing all of the glitz and glamour and the romanticized parts of relationships. When all those have to go on mute because life is happening and you don't get to be, you know, frolicking through the field together, and you got to get down and do the dirty work. The relationship fundamentals, whether you're married or boyfriend and girlfriend, are going to be what carry you through. You know, I think
do you think the journey brought us closer?
Absolutely. You don't go through that, something like that, with somebody and don't come out the other end closer. You just don't. It does leave an indelible, you know, mark on your life. But like, I have these indelible marks of people I love that have had cancer.
Right.
And I don't know. They've definitely changed me each and every time. I think this time changed me. I don't know. I think I'm still in that change right now. It did. Like I said, so with us moving here to Texas,
right?
Mm-hmm. I only have a very, very limited amount of family here.
Exactly.
So then there's that part. Like, all right, not only am I having to be the actual adult in this moment, I don't have what I'm familiar to fall back on. You know, I have my nephew here, but that's just
exactly.
That. But that was the other part of it. It's like, look, this is the time to do it. Like, you got to do it. And even within the fear, it was like there's no shying away from this moment. You got to be her man in this moment. You have to. If there's anything, if there's any moment you got to be her man, is this moment right now. Because this is the moment that counts, because this is literally your life hanging in the balance.
That's deep.
I'm a deep brother.
You know, I think it's easy to, like you said, the ego, where's me? Yeah. That's why I think that term co-survivor is so important.
I would have never thought of it.
Because you don't go through it alone. Right. We may not go through it in identical ways.
Right, right.
But you've been through every step of it with me. And in fact, I had, a whole lot of family right here who stepped up. But they don't see it the same. They don't see those moments where I'm crying. They don't see those first moments when the bandages come off. Mm-hmm. They don't see what it's like to get dressed months later and still not feel like yourself.
What was that device that they had attached to you?
Oh,
that was administering the rest of your treatments afterwards. We were trying to fiddle with that thing. It came off that one time.
That time I knocked it off. Yeah. I can't think of whatever it was for the bone marrow, yeah. Though. That thing, yeah. Like all of those crazy things, moments.
Those are crazy moments, man.
You know, that are those quiet, intimate, like you got to be really close. And not that I'm not close with my family, but they just don't live in the house with me.
It's just different in the house.
To always see it. And that goes back to that question about how do you stay partnered and romantic? Because when you're my person and you've been my person, you're the one that I'm most vulnerable with still. You know, but that's also... The emperor ain't got no clothes. Like, you're seeing all of those moments that aren't the prettiest.
But going back to your family, it's important also that, you know, give them peace of mind. Like, okay, she has somebody in her corner that is there for her in this moment. So that leads to, imagine if I'm not, and then they have to worry about that. And that causes a whole bit of different friction if they got to come in to a place where I should be doing what I'm supposed to do as your man, and I'm not. So then they got to come in and try to intercede in these moments to where they haven't observed you in these vulnerable moments as a woman. They know you. They love you. You're their child. But they haven't had those vulnerable, intimate moments to where they need to be there, where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
So if I'm not doing that and they got to step in and intervene in that regard, that's another problem.
You know, and there's two ways to do that. I can see if I had been single through the journey, of course, that's the kind of maybe validation I would be seeking. Right. But in a relationship... Even in those ugly moments, you want that from your partner.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a different, it's all valid and necessary support, but there, you know what I mean?
It's just different tiers of support.
Exactly.
You know? It's different tiers of support. And you're not going to get the same kind of support from, you know, your sister who loves you to death.
Right.
Than you will from me. It's just, it's a different type of support you're supposed to get and that you're going to get. And not that she wouldn't try to give you the support that I'm slacking on. But that's just.
But it's just like really like to. rah, 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 you're beautiful. Right. Girl, you rocking that baldy. But when your man kisses your bald head and looks you in your face and tells you you're beautiful, that's different.
It goes a little bit different.
That's different. That's different. You know?
And I meant that, though. And you were. You were rocking it. You got a cute little peanut head. No, but you had to go through it and walk it and be this still chipper and graceful person in the midst of having cancer, going through chemo and then going through radiation.
But you rocked it with me. Yeah. I can't imagine what it feels like to shave your woman's head while she's crying, no less. This wasn't a new me, new hair. I just want to shave my head. This was, we have to. Her hair is coming out and she's crying.
To sit there, in that moment, I was like, look, okay, we could. So it was a catch to me. So like, hey, you're clearly not feeling well about your hair. When men see women, you see their woman crying, you don't want to say the wrong thing. So I am running through things to say and do. I'm like, let's try to make it fun. So set a chair in the bathroom, turn the lights on, and Riley looking around the corner trying to figure out why I'm not paying him attention. But, you know, get you buzzed down and kiss your head. I'll show you what I do with my head.
Yep.
Got you the nice hot towel treatment. You got the straight up good treatment. You didn't have no bumps. Man, I had you hooked up. I had you hooked up.
You did.
Nah, we're going to have you straight there. You're going to rock the body. You're going to rock the right body. Then you had all your nice wraps and everything. And then he's like, I don't need these wraps. You was just rocking your earrings. You was good.
Yeah, I knew I wasn't going to rock a wig for sure. I started with the wraps and then it was just like, let's get some sun on this little pale head.
Yeah, your hair was a little pale for a minute. But you had the sun on it. You had your earrings, you had your makeup on, and you were good. You were good. You looked very feminine. You were the beautiful babies, and everything was good. I remember that vividly.
I do, too. I do, too. And I'm glad, of course, we live in an era with social media and cell phones, and what the journey has been well documented. Yes, chronicled
this journey very well. And I think for years to come, even as you continue to add to it with stuff like this, people will be inspired by... Well, you know what you did.
It's kind of weird. Sometimes I catch a few pictures and I'm like, I look sick. I don't feel like I look sick. And certain times I see it and I'm like, I look like a cancer patient.
You never look sick to me. I can just tell where there were times where things were taking its toll, but you never looked like sick to me. I wasn't going to let you get, as much as I could. I just wanted to make sure you were fed. And even those horrible days you were feeling, like you just couldn't do it. Like, I just wanted you to feel supported and, you know, had clean laundry, make sure the cats didn't stink. You know, I wanted to make sure everything. I wanted your living space to be as livable and stress free as possible. That was just what I felt like my job was in that moment, and to just do it to the best of my ability. But your mom was clutch with the cleaning lady, though. I'm like, okay, I got to go back to that.
Because that initial deep cleaning, she cleaned the hell out that place. Man,
I was loving it.
Yeah,
I was trying to.
Yeah, do it all. That's a lot.
It was a lot. It was definitely a lot. It was a lot. But I mean. I saw no other way to do it, and I wasn't going to do it any other way. So no other way to approach it. I would approach it the exact same way.
Would you?
Yep, absolutely. Without a hesitation. Definitely would. You know, I'm of age to get my own cancer checks and colonoscopies and stuff of that nature.
And you better damn well be getting them.
Yes, ma'am. But you know, it's that stuff is scary, and then
it is
even as been a caretaker so many times, you don't want to see yourself on the other side of it, but it's a huge possibility.
It is in this world, anything is possible.
So you know,
but you know, I'd return the favor any day.
Hopefully you won't have to. If I have to, I will, though. You know, that's just life. You know, you can't predict the calls that life gives us sometimes. So we just got to respond the best way we can to the stuff we find ourselves in. And it's not always easy. It's hard. It is very hard because you want certain things, you know, you think you are ready for certain things at certain times. And, it's, you know, you're not. This is what life is giving you right now. And you got to deal with this. Then maybe you can get to that. So,
what advice would you give to caretakers?
I would advise all caretakers to get therapy throughout the process. I think that was very, very big for me, even more so than going through it before. I think the therapy angle really eliminated whether I've been through it or not before. So it kind of helped me cope during the process and rejuvenate on my low days, you know?
Right.
Like, okay, I'm feeling burnt out or I'm stressed about what's going on in life at the moment, but I got to be here for this woman. And she doesn't need to see me, you know, at my emotional lows where she is trying to stay alive, you know, essentially. So I would, therapy is the biggest thing I would recommend. And then, a few times, once or twice during the week, just take an hour or two to yourself and just reset and come back. And then, because I think trying to just go full speed ahead without a break ultimately undermines the care the caretaker is supposed to be giving, you know?
Right.
So you can't pour from an empty cup.
You can't.
And I would have been of no benefit to you if I didn't just take those few little moments here and there to get myself together.
I'm glad you have the wherewithal to do that. I don't even remember if I thought about it then, you know, and I think, remembering, again, that your caregiver is going through it with you is important, and offering them some grace. And I think, but the one thing that I think we've been good at is talking. And so I think we talked about a lot of it while we were going through it too. It wasn't like the elephant in the room or anything like that. But, and of course, caregivers, finding caregivers, right. You know, like I said, having my mom have the house cleaner come in, having family around to drop off a meal occasionally, mm-hmm. or to drop off soup and ginger ale, like those things
and everybody
help alleviate the load.
And such close proximity was a big thing too. Your mom and your dad being close, you know, your sis being close, popping up but like I said, seeing you ring that bell was the best feeling ever. And you know, you're back at your regular fighting weight. You know, you just had to wait for your hair to grow back, but everything was done. You were feeling good, and it was like, you know, next thing I know, you got more hair than you had before you lost it,
right?
And you thriving.
My eyebrows ain't quite the same, but you know,
I'm a person who barely had my forehead continues forever.
My eyebrows still ain't quite right, but you know, hey, I got a head full of hair though.
Yeah, head full of beautiful hair. The curls is popping, girl. You're all good. But no, I do appreciate you. I'm bringing me in for this and getting my perspective. I never would have even considered this.
I think that's what this is about. I think everybody has a voice in this journey, especially the main caregiver, because it is a big, I don't want to use the word burden, it's a big job.
It's a huge job. It's not a burden. It never felt like it was a burden, but it is definitely a job that is, you can't half-ass it. You can't. Because you're the person you're caring for will feel that lack of support and energy, I think.
And I never had a moment where I didn't. As much as I was scared of burdening you with it, you never made it feel like a burden.
I was making sure the babies was all right. Riley would agree.
Riley was like, he's giving away all my attention now.
Huey did whatever Riley did.
Any closing words? I'm trying to formulate my thoughts. I mean, I feel like you know.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like you know, but I thank you, and I don't want to cry because you know I will cry.
Come on, go ahead and cry, girl. This is radio. We can tell you crying now. But no, I know. I'm just happy you walked out the other end of it. That's all.
I am ever so grateful for you, as always.
It is my pleasure.
And so I'm happy and honored to celebrate you this Caregivers Month. I'm about to run all of this good winged eyeliner I got on.
What if I want wings?
But I thank you for being there, for caring for me so beautifully, and for taking care of yourself during that time, because that's important as well. And I'm glad that you're still here rocking with me through the ups and down of hormone therapy and a new body and new aches and pains and all that comes with it.
All the aches and pains that came with 40. Then we had the nerve to turn 40. Right? No, it's my absolute pleasure. I would not change a thing. I would do everything. Probably the only thing I would change is probably just see what I could put more effort in. But I'll give you my all again.
No, you always give 100%.
I would do it exactly the same. We got 40 minutes. That's not bad. It's pretty good. Anything else you want to say before we close out? You want to? I think you should really point out the good work you've been doing over the last 2.5-3 years with the
baddie. I am honored to have been chosen to be a breast cancer baddie ambassador for the Breast of Us. For the Breast of Us is the first community for women of color affected by breast cancer, and we strive to make the rest of their lives after diagnosis the best of their lives. And so it has been an amazing journey advocating, creating space for, and educating about breast cancer for women of color. Women of color die at like phenomenally higher rates than white women. Mm-hmm. We're diagnosed later. Our aches and pains are ignored. And we've got a lot of work to do to close the gap on health disparities. And I am honored to be just a small piece of it. Our founders, Marissa and Jasmine, are doing some amazing, amazing things. And this last year has been amazing. And while we're at it, I went to the first ever inaugural breast cancer baddie retreat, and you encouraged me to step out of my comfort zone and go. I'm
very glad you did. First of all, was that the weekend you guys did that photo shoot?
Yes.
Okay, that was an amazing photo shoot. You looked like you was getting your swag on. But can you tell people where they can find some of this information if they want to learn more?
Absolutely, absolutely. So For the Breast of Us can be found at breastofus.com. And For the Breast of Us on IG and Facebook. And there also is a Facebook group. And of course, I am on Instagram as Sincerity and Sin's Breast Life. And know your lemons, guys. Fill yourself up. The more you know your body and what's normal for you, the quicker you'll be able to identify anything that changes. Because early detection can save your life. You know, it's definitely not a guarantee, but the quicker you can get in and get evaluated, and that goes for everything. So we're filling up our boobies all the time, dudes. I know y'all play with yourself.
Check the testes, fellas.
Yes, but be deliberate about filling up yourself, knowing what's where, so that you can identify when something goes wrong, because we're getting grown in these streets. Mm-hmm. But make no mistake, people can be diagnosed early.
Yep.
So no matter your age, if something is off, something doesn't feel right, something is there that was not there yesterday, you need to know that so you can get in. And you have to advocate for yourself.
Absolutely.
Don't let someone tell you you're too young or that's the thing to be concerned about. Uh-huh. Know your body so that you can be your own best advocate. And hopefully we can continue to create spaces so when you have questions and you need support or you just trying to educate yourself the best you can, that you can find people that look like you and can relate to your journey. And so I thank you for sharing. I think you have a very unique perspective.
Is it unique? I don't know.
You've lost both your parents early on.
Yes. Yeah.
More family members. And then your girlfriend
yeah.
turns around and gets breast cancer. And, you know,
I'm a comic book nerd, so they're doing like a lot of multiverse stuff, and I'm wondering if that's just like the one constant point in any version of life I'm gonna ever encounter. There's always gonna be a point in life where I'll encounter or do battle with cancer in some form.
I hope this is the last time.
I hope so too, but if not, I'll be ready.
You will. You're better equipped than most, unfortunately. But
you know, who knows who'll be equipped after hearing this though, you know?
And that is the entire goal. Yeah. And I hope that caregivers also feel validated, also feel like they have a voice and a story to tell. And I hope that if you didn't know it, that you know it now. This story is our story. Mm-hmm. So if you ever feel so moved, if someone asks you about the journey, you can tell any and all of mm-hmm. it. This is your story as well.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's not just me who gets to be the advocate and the survivor, because you're my co-survivor, babies.
Got you. Always the babies. Well, I think we covered everything. What do you think?
I think we have.
Well, look, I am Sincere 529. I'm kind of in between podcasts right now. Which you'll be able to find me everywhere on my new podcast entitled The King's Gambit, which is kind of ironic. You know, you kind of, in The King's Gambit, I'm a chess nerd moment right here. You know, in The King's Gambit, you sacrifice your very first piece for position. So, you know, I've had a lot of sacrifices, but the sacrifices I had early in life
helped you position
me to be ready for what I needed to encounter later on in life. So,
Bars.
Boy's a poet, too.
Yeah, so Sincere529, Sincere529.com, yeah. Hashtag Sincere529.
Hashtag Beware the Poet, hashtag Beware the DJ, hashtag yep. Beware the Producer, too.
We're doing it all.
Trying to keep up with you, man. You got all the cool hobbies. I want some cool hobbies.
Please, you in here making whole albums.
Yeah, I'm trying. But I do appreciate you having me and asking me.
I appreciate you. I thank you. And so happy to celebrate you as my co-survivor.
Absolutely. The pleasure's been all mine. If there is nothing more,
that'll do it. We'll holler at you one day soon.
All right. And as always, as I do, reminding you to be good. And if you don't be good, be good at it. Peace.